the 29th of January, and I had some announcements to make. We're going to take a look at a couple of examples. We have to continue with fees. We should finish fees today. I don't mind if you ask questions. We got a little off track last time. That's fine. That's great. I have a certain number of slides I want to get through every day. But hey, if I don't get through them, it's not the end of the world. We have time at the end of the semester. If we move slower, it's not a problem. So do ask questions. But if we get stuck on a certain point, I might just say, you know what, we got to come back to this later. See me after class. All right, any questions, any thoughts? You excited?
Yeah.
All right, joke, yeah. Who's got a good joke? No, and I only have bad jokes. Did I tell you about the alligator that walked into the bar?
Yeah.
How about the bear?
Yeah.
And the mushroom?
Yeah.
And the sandwich?
Yeah.
How about...
Yeah.
Oh, you weren't here last week. You were here last Thursday?
Mm-hmm.
The sandwich. Okay, I have to class. How about the neutron?
No.
See, I didn't tell you about the neutron that walked into the bar. This neutron walks into the bar. Have you heard this one before?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, you have.
They
okay.
All go to bars, huh?
Not all, but then for a while. And the neutron orders a beer, and the bartender gives him the beer. The neutron takes out his wallet and goes to pay and says, how much? And the bartender says, for you, no charge. You see, he's a neutron. You see, he doesn't have a charge. He's not a charge. Did you get it?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Now, do you understand why you have to bring good jokes? Bring good jokes, right, yes. Okay. The assignments are not due until the end of next week. I want you to, some people go, oh, yeah, I don't have to worry about that, and all of a sudden they come upon them. So remember that the assignments are due next Thursday. We may have an exam next Thursday also. We'll see how the next three sessions go. It might be postponed till the next week, but not later than that. So it'll be either next Thursday or the Tuesday afterwards. Maybe. We don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. We don't want to spend too much time. And we're not doing too bad, folks, for a couple of weeks. UPS and Procter & Gamble and McDonald's and Caterpillar are doing well. Coke is basically unchanged. But Lockheed went down, and look at Apple. But as a long-term buy, I think Apple's going to be great, assuming that people still line up around the block and can't wait to have their products. Plus, anybody know anything about Apple TV or iTV or what it's going to be called? Anybody been following it? What?
The new version?
Well, they're coming.
Be an actual.
I don't know. They're everything's under wraps, and they keep talking about it, but it's not out yet, and we'll see what happens if it does ever come out. But if it does,
like Android TV, for example, like Google.
Yeah.
Their own smart TV, and then there's.
Okay, well, if it works out for them...
This is an actual TV set.
I don't know what it is, and I don't care, because I don't even have a television in my house. People go, you don't have a television? No, you can afford one, can't you? I don't want one, you don't understand. And so you're talking to the wrong guy. But if it's this, if it works, and people go to Apple, buy their TV, and then they go to Apple and buy their content, right? They just like they do with iTunes. Apple could double their earnings, so we'll see. Now, a couple of you gave me the deer in the headlights there on last Thursday. And what the hell is a mutual fund? And I want to show you, here they are. Here is an investor. What's his name or her name?
I'm an investor.
And she has two mutual funds in her Roth IRA. We'll discuss the Roth IRA later on, much later on. And we discuss it in detail in the financial planning and money management class. But she has two mutual funds. And these are the names of the funds. And we'll discuss the different types of funds later on and take a look at some. There's only 10,000 of them, folks, out there. So we can't look at all of them. But as of December 31st, 2011, this is how much money she had in her account. But the actual mutual fund doesn't keep track of how much money. They keep track of how many shares. So people get confused with that because the price changes every day. And as the price changes, the value of your account changes depending on how many shares you have. That's what really gets people a bit confused about. They go, well, where's all my money? It's in the account. Relax. But it's in shares. And notice that the shares are in thousands. So you're buying little pieces of a share. And then every day, at the end of the day, they add up what the mutual fund is worth. You multiply the number of shares times whichever the price is at that day, and that's how much your value is every day. But it changes every day. This person had this much at the beginning of the quarter. They didn't put any new things in. They didn't take anything out. And they had just a little bit of dividends and capital gains. And the account went up just a little bit in the beginning of 2012. And at the end of March 31st, they had this much in their account. But of course, the next day it changes. Yes?
You know, mutual funds can buy $10,000 of shares. Can you buy that much stock yourself? Or do you have to buy like a whole share?
Most stocks you buy in one share increments. There are some companies that will allow you to buy thousands of shares. And when you do what's called a dividend reinvestment plan, that company that is managing the dividend reinvestment plan will also let you buy thousands of shares. And we'll see that when we get to Chapter 5. But normally, individual investors buy them in one-share increments. It used to be that companies, brokerage firms, wanted you to buy 100 shares at a time. And we'll discuss that. There's a traditional technological reason why they did, and now that's gone. All that technology is taking care of all that. You can buy one share of any stock you want. Make sense? Any other questions about mutual funds? Just what the hell are they? Yeah. This one is a mutual fund that invests globally, but it concentrates on the developing world. But it invests everywhere around the world, but it tries to take advantage of the developing markets. This one is a company that invests mostly in the United States, domestic, and very large companies, multinational companies, but they can invest a little bit outside the world. All right? Okay, let's continue to where we were with fees, the real exciting part of mutual funds. Where were we? Okay. You got to understand this, folks, because you're the expert. We discussed the management fees, the 12B1 fees, the accounting and other expenses. Those are every year. You get hit with those every year. We discussed trading costs that we don't see in the prospectus, but we can get an idea of how much trading they're doing by looking at the turnover. And then we got started on loads and no loads. It used to be that all mutual funds had a sales load, a commission, a sales charge. They all mean the same thing. Anywhere from 3 to 5%. And that is used to compensate the financial representative. And the fund's distributor gets a little bit of that money. So the brokerage firm that represented, it's usually a broker, independent broker, who recommended the mutual funds will get some of that commission, their company gets some other part of that, and then the fund distributor, the company, the part of the mutual fund, as we talked about on last week, that actually does the initiation, that issues the mutual fund shares out to the world. Along came no-load funds. The mutual fund tried to go around the brokers. They do not charge a commission, and they were traditionally sold directly to shareholders. So the idea was, hey, you're going to contact us directly through 800 numbers or mail or now via the Internet. But do you think the brokers were happy about that? No. So they created... Just hang on a minute. See if you can hang. Stick with us. But you're going to hear people say, you should never buy a load fund, or you should stick with load funds, or stick... Be careful. It's an endless debate. There's going to be some people who like load funds, some people who like no loads. Now, the problem was that the brokers didn't like the fact that these companies were going around them. So they decided they were going to make things interesting. And they created different classes of funds. So I hope you can stick with us, okay? So watch carefully, and we'll see. If I go too fast, you just slow me down. But you need to understand the differences between these things. Got your ABCDs? Yeah. Pull them out. You're going to need them eventually, but not for a while. The Class A shares. Originally, all mutual funds were sold with a front-end load. So there was no Class A. They didn't have a name for it. It was just a front-end load or a commission. Right? And And when the no-load funds came out, the brokers weren't too happy about that. Because people would come up to them and say, well, Ms. Broker, well, Mr. Broker, I don't really want to pay that commission. And what did the broker say? No problem. There's always no problem. Sit down. Relax. For you, we have the Class B shares. And these are back-end load. Huh? It's another name for it. Is contingent deferred sales charge. Isn't that a great name? CDSC? Say contingent. Doesn't it feel good when you say it? Contingent. Contingent deferred sales charge. What happens is, yes, you say, well, wait a minute, Ms. Broker. What difference does it make if I pay up front or pay it back? Relax! There's no problem. You see, it starts out at 6% or 5% or 4%. And then every year it goes down by 1% or 2% or whatever. So it might start out at 5% and then after 1 year or the first year. And then 4%, 3%, 2%, 0%. So after 5 years or 6 years or 4 years, depending on the mutual fund, some, you know, different time lengths, you don't pay any commission. And this is a mutual fund, right? You're gonna leave it in there for the long term, right, Mr. and Mrs. John Q. Investor? Right? You're not gonna take your money out soon. This is a long term investment. And they go, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. How long is our treasury? What was that? Yeah, so no, you don't have to worry about the back end charge as long as you leave the money in. We'll charge you more every year for 8 years or 4 years or 6 years. Okay, so normally the back end load pay higher annual operating expenses via those wonderful 12B1 fees until the contingent deferred sales charge declines to zero, and then the Class B shares revert to Class A shares. Are you confused yet? Good. We've done our job. So you go to your broker and you say, well, Ms. Broker, Mr. Broker, I don't want to pay an upfront fee. I don't want to pay a back-end fee. And what does your broker say?
No.
Well, come on. What does your broker say?
No.
No problem. For you, we have the broker no... Oh, we're not allowed to call them no-load funds. But for many years, the brokers called them broker no-load funds. But the SEC says you can't do that anymore. So we crossed out the no-load and write in load. And these are called the Class C shares. They have no front end. Well, they'll hit you with a 1% fee or 0.95% fee if you take it out within 1 year. But you're not going to do that, are you, Mr. John Q. Investor? You're going to leave your money in. Oh, yes, I'm going to leave my money in for the long term. And there's no back end fee. But what happens? They have higher annual operating expenses in perpetuity. Don't you just love that word? Perpetuity. What does it mean? Yeah, forever. Forever. You get to spit on your friends when you say it. Perpetuity. Or for 10 years, sometimes they revert to the other share classes. But you're going to pay higher annual operating expenses via those 12B1 fees for a long time. So you can wind up, even though there's no upfront fee, back-end fee, the Class C shares can wind up costing you more over time because of those fees. The Securities and Exchange Commission says, oh, no, you can't call these no loads anymore because the 12B1 fee is greater than 0.25%. What? Hang on a minute. Let's take a look. Next are the no-load funds. And there are now called advisor or broker no-load funds. And these really are no-load. There's no upfront fee, no back-end fee. Sometimes they're called Class F. Sometimes they're called Class I. F for financial advisor, I for investment advisor. They go by their various names. And what they do is they hold these things in what is often called a wrap account. They wrap their arms around the mutual funds. It's also called a management account or a wealth management account. We're not your brokers. Oh, no, 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 no. We're your wealth managers. We're not brokers. Oh, no, 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 no. We're going to represent your mutual funds, and you'll pay no upfront fee, no back-end fee, lower annual operating expenses, sometimes lower than the A shares. 5% for the rest of your life. Per year. Isn't that awesome? If you're a broker, you love these things. In fact, many of the major brokerage firms have been pushing these for several years now. What happens is they charge you an extra 1 or 2% every year for as long as you hold the account. But they'll send you a bottle of wine on your birthday and take you golfing every once in a while, assuming you got at least a couple $100,000 in there. And some brokers, oh, unless you have $500,000, I can't even talk to you. Drives me insane. Those people don't need your help, bozo. It's the people who are putting $50, $100. They're the ones that need your help, but I don't make any money off of them. Oh, well. Get a job. Then the last group are what the industry, the financial media industry, sometimes, this is not a technical term, there's a couple of things over there, true no-load funds. These are mutual funds that deal directly with the public. They may not have a 12b1 fee greater than 0.25%. Doesn't that make your heart sing? Not having a 12b1 fee greater than 0.25%, that means you have a true no-load fund. They're the darlings of the popular media. Bypass the middleman. Who needs a financial advisor? Just send... What is it? What does Susie Orman want you to do? Buy her books? Yeah. But that does not mean that the overall fees are low. There are some no-load funds that have high annual operating expenses and may be doing a lot of trading and so have high trading costs. So the no-load fund may wind up costing you more than the load fund. Are you confused yet?
Yes.
Good. We have done our job. We, meaning the financial brokers and the industry. So let's take a look at a real mutual fund, folks. This is a real mutual fund, and this data is included in what is called the prospectus. And this, you want to sit there? Okay. In the prospectus. And this is it used to be a whole lot bigger until people stopped. Everybody started going to the internet, and they said, look, we're burning a bunch of trees. You can get the regular prospectus still. It's still available. But now it's the summary prospectus. And if you meet the broker in person, the broker is supposed to hand you that, along with another document I'll show you probably on Thursday, along with any other sales literature. And this is, I'll tell you, folks, these are great. These are absolutely fabulous. If you have insomnia, you just sit down and start reading this thing, and bingo, you will be fast asleep. Okay? Actually, it's a very interesting story. You know, this is when I was still a computer nerd. I was working for a brokerage firm doing computer work for the boss, and I didn't trust him. Not that I didn't trust him. I thought he was a great guy. I did not like the kind of broker he was. He was the buy and selling. He had these computer programs that I was doing, and I think this was ridiculous. I know nothing about statistics, and though you can't predict the future. Yes, you can. 100 years from now, minorities and women will be fighting for their rights. Politicians will be kissing babies and making promises they have no intentions of keeping, and fathers and sons won't understand one another. I am sure that those predictions will come true. Okay. All right. So, presuming we're still around. And so, do pass this around. And what you want to do is you want to look at page number 1, which is what we're going to show up here on the screen. And the second in command, it's a small brokerage firm, the vice president, a woman who worked in the industry for many years and can tell you horror stories about the way men treated women in the industry back in the 60s and 70s and 80s, showed me a mutual fund. Because I was worried. I was frightened by stocks. I understood. I had my MBA. I understood that they had the best returns, but they're risky. So I took the prospectus, I took it home, read the thing front to back. Now that was not when it was 8 pages, that was when it was 32 pages. And I came back and I said, that was pretty interesting. Can you give me the other one you were talking about? I want to see the other one. And she looked at me like I had three eyes in the middle of my forehead. And she said, you read the prospectus? I said, yeah, front to back. I'm going to give these people my money. I want to know what's going on. Yeah, it was boring, but I read the whole thing. She goes, I don't know anybody who's ever read a prospectus. I've never read a prospectus. And she's been in the industry for 25 years. I said, well, that's it. You're going to give these people your money. And that's when I knew maybe I could do it okay in this industry. So here is a one of the nation's largest mutual funds called the Growth Fund of America. How's that for a generic name, right? Growth Fund of America. What do you think they invest in?
America.
America, right. Most of the companies are based in the United States, and they're looking for companies that are growing, right? Growing, or they can grow the earnings, grow the capital, grow the account. So they have class A, B, C, and F shares. Now they have a few more. As you pass this around, you're going to see there's a few more, but we're going to concentrate on the biggies here. The Class A shares come with a 5.75 maximum sales charge, which means that if you give them $50, they're going to take $2.88. Right? You give them $100, they're going to take $5.75. $1,000, $57.50. $10,000, $575. You see what's going on?
$100,000.
No. What happens is once you reach certain breakpoints, you see why it says maximum? The sales charge starts to go down. And we're going to see the schedule later on. Up, so at 25,000 it goes down to 5%. At 50,000, 4.5%. At 100,000,
3.5%.
This is the highest it will be. But as you put more money in or your account gets bigger, this number goes down. Until finally when you put in $1 million, it disappears. Yeah. If you're wealthy, they treat you well. If you're wealthy, they treat you well. If you're one of the peons, well then, get in line. That's just when you put money in. Then, in perpetuity, annual operating expenses are 28 cents for every $100. That's what 0.28% means. Multiply 100 times 0.28 and you get 28 cents. They're going to go and send that money to the management company.
For sure.
That's per $100. Remember, the shares are just the number of shares you have. How much money do you have in the account? So that goes to the company that's knocking on the doors and saying, well, we'll buy Walmart and Target and we won't buy Kmart, right? The next category are the 12B1 fees, the distribution and or service fees. 24 cents. Goes to distributing, servicing, advertising, and the like. And then 19 cents goes to other expenses. You know, paying for the lights, paying for this thing, and the website, and the janitors. So for every $100 you have in your account, in perpetuity, you have to pay every year 71 cents. Now, does that sound like a lot? Does it sound like a little bit? By industry standards, that's actually pretty low. Normally, it's between 1 and 2%. Do the banks and the life insurance companies tell you how much they charge you? Heck no. That's because they don't have the Investment Company Act of 1940. The Investment Company Act of 1940 said, Mr. Mutual Fund Company, Ms. Mutual Fund Company, you have to tell your customers through the prospectus how much you are charging them. And so they make sure the prospectus is written in such a way that nobody looks, and they can't understand it. The banks and the insurance companies charge far more than this, 2-3%, sometimes more, per year!
For every 100?
For every $100. Hey, they're not in this business for their health. They're not in this. They're out to make money. Right? They want to make money on your money. Banks sometimes make a whole lot more than $3 for every $100 you deposit, depending on how many clients they have who are paying 18% on their credit cards. Think about it. They're paying you nothing, 0.02%, 0.01%, and they're taking your money and lending it out to customers who are paying 18% on their credit cards. So how much money are they making on $100?
$18.
Are you, do you understand what's going on here?
Yeah.
Do you trust the banks?
Oh, yeah.
You do? Okay. Now, you trust that your money will still be there, right? You can trust that because it's banked by the federal government. Now, you go to your broker and say, but Ms. Broker, I don't want that upfront fee. And she says?
No.
She says?
No.
Makes it go faster. There's no upfront fee. There's a 5% maximum contingent deferred sales charge, which goes to 4%, 3%, 2%, 1%, disappears. But you're going to leave the money in, aren't you, Mr. and Ms. John Q? Oh, yes. And so you will not ever pay a back-end fee as long as you leave the money in for 6 years. Your management fees are 28 cents, just like the A shares. The 12B1 fees have increased fourfold. What's going on here? What are they doing?
They're making up
the front end by charging you 0.76%, 1%, a dollar, every year for 8 years. And then they become A shares. You with me? Understand? Nod your head yes? Or no, Frank? I don't have any idea what you're talking about. Because they hope you don't. They hope you can't figure this out. And then 18 cents, so $1.46. So bingo! It's double. Are you with me? Okay. You go to your broker and say, I don't want that upfront fee. I don't want that back-end fee. Broker says?
No problem.
And shows you the Class C shares, which she uses no-load broker. She says still broker no-load funds, which she's not allowed to do. And you pay no upfront fee, a 1% fee if you take the money out within a year, which you're not going to do. You don't do that. Don't buy a mutual fund unless it's an emergency or something like that. 28 cents, a dollar, 21 cents, $1.49 for 10 years. So you go to your broker, you say, I don't want the upfront fee, I don't want the back-end fee, I want lower annual operating expenses, and she says, she shows you the Class F shares, which have no upfront fee, no back-end fee, lower annual operating expenses, even lower than the A shares. What? She's going to charge you an extra 2%, 1 to 2%, every year for as long as you hold the funds.
So it doesn't get...
No, it never goes away. Bend over and... Yeah. Right, $2.68. But we're your wealth managers. Well, every mutual fund has a prospectus, and you see the fees for each one. Yeah. This is the Growth Fund of America. And there are Class A shares, B shares, C shares, F shares. There's a few other classes that we're not getting into, but these are the biggies. There's E shares for educational savings accounts. There are R shares for retirement accounts. Sometimes there's Z shares for some companies. Everybody has different. I know, it gets ridiculous. Now, here's another mutual fund, which is basically similar to the Growth Fund of America. It's called Alliance Large Cap. Did you have a question?
Yeah, so, you're thinking it's worth putting your money in this mutual fund?
In this one? Particular one? I would say, depending on your... I'm a big fan of this company, yeah. We'd have to sit down and say, sit down, relax. But if you have a long-term perspective, this fund has been an excellent fund. This is a good fund.
So where would you want to put your money?
Relax. You have to decide that. Relax. We haven't even seen all different types of mutual funds yet. Yes. No. I don't want to get into that yet. Wait. We got to deal with fees today. I think I'll show you. Capital World Growth and Income?
Yeah.
Good one. Okay. Alliance Large Cap Growth Fund. This is a mutual fund that is similar to the Growth Fund of America. Invests mostly in big companies that are growing in the United States. Notice the maximum sales charge. It's a little bit less, isn't it? Instead of 5.27, it's 4.25. So they're taking $4.25. But look at the management fee. Look at the 12B1 fee. And the... So this one was charging you 71 cents. And this one is charging you $1.25 every year in perpetuity.
Per $100.
Per $100, yeah. Are you with me? Okay, so these have higher annual operating expenses, don't they? For in return for that lower Class A upfront fee, they're hitting you with higher expenses. The same thing is true over here. The Class B shares have 4% to start for the first year, 3, 2, 1, and then they disappear. But notice the... Yes?
Do all company prospectus live just like this?
Yes, they have to, according to SEC rules. If you go on their website or download the prospectus or they give you a prospectus, it'll look just like this.
Right next to each other.
Right next to each other. If they're there. And some companies have different, you know, various ones. I know. But nobody looks at them. Nobody looks at them. In fact, sometimes if you're a broker, you have to take this. You understand? You have to take this with you or I can get in trouble. So the B shares have higher annual operating expenses courtesy of the... Wonderfully named. Let's see if anybody can say it. What is it called? You have to say it. You might think I'm crazy. You might be right. But when you say it, it actually helps you. What are the names of that fee, those shares?
12B1.
Fees. I'm sorry, 12B1. You didn't sing. Okay. So $2.18 for 6 years, and then they become the A shares. The Class C shares, $2.11. And $1.07 for the Class F shares, plus the extra 1 or 2%, depending on your brokers, as such management fee. Now, here's another mutual fund, a very famous now... Yeah, I'm sorry.
I have a question.
Sure.
So, in your opinion, which class of shares...
Hang on a minute. I want you to decide. Hang on a minute. I want you to decide. Hang on. Relax. Just relax. Hang on. We're not done yet. I'm going to throw you a money pitch pretty soon.
So, in this case, it would be $550 annually per 100 because of the $425.
No, that's just when you put the money in. This is upfront fee. That's when you put the money in. This happens every year. That's for managing it. There are two funds, two fees, annual operating expenses and a load fee, and some funds don't have a load fee. Now, the next group is the Legg Mason Value Trust, and we'll come back to this later on because this guy who ran this for many years, he retired last year, his name was Bill Miller, did phenomenally for... A little while. No, actually 15 years. And they didn't have Class A shares. They didn't have Class C shares. What they had were primary, financial intermediary, and institutional. A few years ago, when they changed the rules, they created Class A and Class C. So they followed the Growth Fund of America. 5.75%, 67 cents for management fees, 25 cents for the 12B1 fees, other expenses 9 cents, $1.01. But these are relatively new. This is what most people have with when they bought the value trust, the Class C shares. No upfront fee. They're going to hit you with almost 1%, 0.95%, if you take the money out within a year, but you're not going to do that. 67 cents to the managers, 95 cents for the 12B1 fees, 16 cents, $1.78. So do you see what the SEC was trying to say? The SEC was trying to say, you can't call these no-load brokers, because the load has been stuffed into the 12B1 fee. So what we're going to do is, if the 12B1 fee is greater than 0.25%, we're going to tell you to call them a load fund. Now, I am a bit cynical, and all I would do, and I don't know, there's probably like lawyers making sure I couldn't do that, is just pick this number up and put it up here and put it down there and make sure that's not greater than 0.25%. It's a no-load fund.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I just did?
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it. Because I bet you there's all kinds of rules and regulations. Or they'll probably say, no, guys, that's not what we had in mind. Financial intermediary, remember they're going to tack their 1% or 2%. And institutional, how do you get them? You have to be institutionalized? Now for something completely different. Have you heard of Vanguard, the company Vanguard? Now the largest mutual fund company. They pioneered, they weren't the only ones, but they pioneered the index fund. And this mutual fund does no research. They don't knock on Toyota's doors. They don't knock on GM's or Ford's doors. They just look at a list called the Standard & Poor's 500, which we will discuss in detail in Chapter 5. The term for this is passive management. Say it. What is the term? They are doing no management. They are not deciding whether they should buy Walmart or Target or Kmart. They look at a list of 500 companies, and if it's on the list, they buy it. If it's not on the list, they don't buy it. It's that simple. Do you understand? You or I could run this mutual fund. Assuming we... Oh, yeah, right. You have to come up with a few hundred million dollars. Yeah, let's all chip in a few hundred million. No upfront fee, no back-end fee. Look at the management fee.
Yeah.
0.14%, 14 cents. It better be. They ain't doing anything. There's no 12b1 fees. They don't distribute it through brokers. So if you have less than $10,000, they hit you with a $20 annual fee. They just say, because small account, that's still something. And then the other expenses are 3 cents. So 17 cents for every $100 you have in there, you pay 17 cents a year. Much lower than any other funds. So the other funds were all actively managed. This one is passively managed. You understand the difference?
You just put the money in there and
buy it. Right. They don't bother to think about what companies they want to buy. They just look at this list. If the stock is on the list, they buy it. If it's not on the list, they don't buy it. It's that simple. That's right. If it falls off the list, they have to sell. Another one takes its place. They have to buy. So it's robo-investing, right? Okay. Now, what happened is Vanguard pioneered this and became the world's largest mutual fund company briefly back in about 2004. They overtook Fidelity, which Fidelity had been the world's largest mutual fund company for decades. And Fidelity's based in Boston.
Boston.
Vanguard is based in Malvern, Pennsylvania, which is outside Philadelphia. King of Prussia, Valley Forge. It's a bizarre little area. So you got to know the Bostonians. They weren't even in Philadelphia. So Fidelity said, uh-oh, right? So what they did is they eliminated all sales lows, created their own index funds, and notice they called the Spartan 500. What was the Spartans were, you know, cheap, right? They abstemious. You like that word? Abstemious? You're abstemious. Means they're cheap. And so what did they do? No upfront fee, no back-end fee. Yeah. Other expenses. So this thing is charging you less than 10 cents for every $100. It's like limbo. Hello, can you go? Do you understand what's going on here? It's competition, right? The same 500 companies. That's what's going on. You understand? You just nod your head yes. Or go, no, Frank. Blanca, I got that look. Yeah? Okay. It's gorgeous. Okay, again, if you don't have $10,000, they hit you with a $10 fee. It's cheaper, right? It's just cheaper. Okay, so you got that? You understand what's going on here? Now, in the prospectus will also be something that shows you what happens if you hold the mutual fund for 1, 3, 5, and 10 years. So if we go to the prospectus that's being passed around on the Growth Fund of America, it's on the next page, you will see that if we put $10,000 and a hypothetical 5% return, that's what the SEC requires. I don't know why they use 10 grand, that's what they use. You, the first year, have to pay that $575 fee, right? For the commission that goes to your broker and goes to the mutual fund, goes to your broker's company. You don't pay that with the B or the C shares. And you certainly don't pay it with the F shares. So after 1 year, the A shares cost a lot more. After 3 years, they still cost a lot more. After 5 years, they not a whole lot. You see what's happening? And then after 10 years, who winds up costing more? The B and the C shares. The C shares costing the most. In fact, now, if you're a broker and you sell your client's mutual funds that are B or C shares, or F shares, you have to get the client to sign a provision in the agreement that says that they have been explained explain me. They have been, what has been explained to them is the fact that if they go with the B or C shares, over time they're probably going to wind up paying more money than the A shares.
After you took a certain amount of time, you take out the money, the dividends you made, tax-free, right?
That's a Roth IRA. Don't confuse that with the Roth IRA. The Roth IRA allows you to take out the money tax-free when you retire. It doesn't matter what the investment is.
Okay.
It doesn't matter what the investment is, but sure. We don't normally discuss this. Wait until the end of the semester, but if you really want to learn more about Roth IRAs, I'll point you in the right direction, or we can sit down. They are cool. Everybody should have a Roth IRA. We're not allowed to say that, by the way. Because that means, you know, you haven't discussed with your clients the advantages and disadvantages of different types of accounts, and you didn't do your due diligence to determine what's in the best interest of the client. I don't give a shit. I don't care. Everybody's got a Roth IRA. Now, the F shares look like they're the best deal, right?
Yeah.
What are we missing? Notice it says excludes the advisor fee. Although it looks as though the F shares are the best deal, this does not include the advisor's annual fee. Adding the advisor's typical fee of 1% to 2% per year would easily add an additional $1,200 to $2,400 to the total cost. So, now we get back to your question. Oh, if you're in it for the long term, which do you think is the best choice? A, B, C, or F? If you trust your advisor and don't want to go alone, then the A shares are the best deal, normally if you're in it for the long term. If you want to go it alone, what are you going to do? You're going to go with a true no-load fund. Unless you believe that the mutual fund for you happens to be a low mutual fund, then find somebody you can trust to be a broker, or better yet, dear students, become your own broker, and then you get the fees. You understand? You with me? Understand? And I hope some of you will become brokers. That's what?
You get a cool prop?
No, you don't get a cool prop. That's only that's if you're on Wall Street. All right, now, the Legg Mason Value Trust, the same thing applies. The A shares are costing you more to start with, but wind up costing you less over time. The F shares are cheaper, but you got to add the $1,200, $2,400 on top of that. And then the institutional class look to be the best, right? How do you get them? Well, for starters, are you a large pension fund, a university endowment, or a tax-exempt charity?
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, do you have at least $1 million to invest with us?
Yeah.
Oh, well. Now, the index fund, should it be cheaper?
Yeah.
It better be. If not, you're not getting a very good index fund, and we'll come back to that later. Look at the investor class. That's the one we looked at. $17, $55, $96, $217 over 10 years on a $10,000 investment, assuming you made 5% a year. The fees for passively managed index funds, everybody say that term, passively managed index fund. Let me ask you, what are they called?
Passively managed index fund.
Might be an answer to one of the assignment questions. Will almost always be less than actively managed funds. If they aren't, that means it's a 401k plan that some broker has snuck in an index fund with high fees, and they get to pocket the difference. The Admiral class shares used to be available only with a minimum of $100,000, and then you paid 5 cents. However, as of at the end of 2011, Vanguard allowed people to have the Admiral class shares with 5 cents fees if you only had $10,000. So if you have $10,000, you get very, very low fees for your index funds. But you get index funds. Okay, questions, thoughts? We're almost done. All right, now, here is the breakpoint sales reductions. We said that you paid 5.75% maximum. But as soon as you purchase or your investment becomes greater than $25,000, it goes down to 5%. $50,000, it goes down to 4.5%. 3.5%, 2.5%, 2%, 1.5% until?
Zero.
Now, some brokers, I first heard this, I could not believe it. I just want to say,
Some brokers would fail to inform their clients of this feature. Instead, as the client approached the breakpoint, the broker would advise them to start another fund. You understand what they're doing? They want to keep the fee high. Why would you do that? Yes, but that's penny wise, pound foolish. As soon as your investor figures out what they're doing, what are they going to do? They're going to file a lawsuit, as well they should. And in fact, now, all brokers are told, if you're caught doing this, not only will you be required to pay the amount they were supposed to have saved, you will be disciplined and may lose your license. So you can't do this anymore. Not that you should have done it to begin with. The contingent deferred sales charge for the Class B shares for the Growth Fund of America started 5% for the first year, 4, 3, 2, 1. The back-end sales charge on Class B shares typically are reduced over time until they are eliminated. But you pay more through the 12B1 fee. This kind of schedule is very typical of annuities, but it usually starts at 20%. Annuities, which are life insurance products, we'll take a look at later on. We'll insult everybody by the end of the semester, don't worry. So, are you exhausted?
Yeah.
But you got to study this, folks. Don't think this is it. Okay, I'm done with that. No, I want you to know this. Because when you're sitting in front of that goofball up with the three-piece suit and the 401k plan, explaining to how we're going to do well for all of you, and you look at the fees and you go, wait a minute, how come we're paying this much for this mutual fund? He is going to pee his pants, I swear. And they're all going to look at you, all your fellow employees, and say, where did you learn that? And what are you going to tell them? Yeah, fire, business 123. So I'm going to give you $10,000 10 years ago. $10,000, 10 years. Not a bad deal, right? Got your ABCDs? No, I didn't bring them. I forgot to bring them. So, write on a piece of paper, A, B, C, and D. Okay, do you want the Growth Fund of America Class A, the Alliance Large Cap Growth Fund Class A, the Legg Mason Value Trust, which was called the primary class, now it's called Class C, or the Vanguard Index Fund 500? Which one do you want, A, B, C, or D? You don't have to be right, it's not real money. A, A, D, 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 A, A, A. What do you think? What do you think? Let me see. Come on, you don't have to be right. It's not real money. Don't worry about it. Okay. Here's how you would have done. A and B, actually, even after the upfront fee, were able to eke out a better return than the Standard & Poor's 500. Look at poor Mr. Bill Miller. If you had seen this before the organic matter hit the Ventolin device in 2007 and 8, that number would have been $37,000.
Whoa.
And now it's 12? Yeah. Fees are important, but they shouldn't be the only thing that you look at. They do not tell you the whole story. When comparing mutual funds, you must look at many attributes, not the least of which are the rates of return, preferably over longer periods of time. Now, you see the asterisks? What do they mean? That assumes you paid the upfront fee. If you had gotten them at what's called net asset value, which sometimes you do if it's inside a retirement account, you would have done better. You would have done 8.24% and 7.75%. If you had taken this class a few years ago, after 2008, all those numbers would have been negative. No, actually, no. This number would not have been negative, but all the other ones would have been negative. Yes?
As those rates of return, are they current?
Yeah. Really? As of December 31st, 2012, this is what you would have had if you put $10,000 away 10 years ago.
That's still not bad. That's only about $1,000 difference.
Yeah, no, it's not bad. Not bad. That's pretty good. But again, this has been, I love politics. Poly means many, ticks are blood sucking and six. As much as they hate Obama, the folks on Wall Street and the Republicans hate him, he's been one of the best presidents for the stock market ever. Is it because anything he did?
Nope.
No, it's because how bad Bush was, right? It's because what happened before he came in. It's just, you know, it's just luck. It's just luck. But at the same time, they hate him. Any questions? Any thoughts?
No.
So you have to know this stuff. You have to know this very, very well. So, A, B, C, or D. Those shares do not have an upfront sales load. Instead, they assess a decreasing back-end load if you withdraw your money within 6 years. The annual operating expense is higher, courtesy of the 12b-1 fees. Decreasing back-end load, class A, B, C, or FRI. Back-end load.
B.
They normally eventually revert to A shares after 4, 6, 8 years, depending on the company. Alliance does it 4, Americans in 6. These shares do not have an upfront fee and only a 1% back-end fee if redeemed within 1 year. The advisor called them no load, but you notice that their annual operating expense is higher than the other share classes, again, courtesy of the ubiquitous, like that word, ubiquitous? It means everywhere. Again, courtesy of the ubiquitous 12b-1 fees. No upfront fee, no back-end fee, but higher annual operating expenses? Those are the C shares. If you said D, it was probably because you forgot about the higher annual operating expenses. The F shares, the F and the I shares have lower annual operating expenses, but and then your financial advisor tells you that these shares have no sales fee and a very low annual operating expense. She mumbles something about wealth management. These shares are A, B, C, F, or I.
FRI.
She also did her best not to explain to you that her brokerage firm will charge you an extra 2% each year forever. Okay, ready to stretch? Now, pull out the handout. On the other side of the sample portfolio, and I only have a couple left, because I know some of you are going to say, I need one. I gave them out. On the back is the doodles. Scramble sheet, I call it. And folks, this is just the list that we're going to go through are just the major types. They are not all income. Don't take anything off my desk. Because you always take the wrong thing. Okay, there you go. What we're going to do is we're going to start on, we won't finish until Thursday. We're going to go from the most riskiest mutual funds all the way to the least riskiest. And the most riskiest mutual funds, there are some that are even worse, but we won't discuss those, are stock funds. Because stocks are risky, right? High return, high volatility, high risk. And the category which has the greatest risk is the aggressive growth funds. Now, folks, the problem is there are one or two categories above this, depending on what company you go to. You might see them referred to as ultra or pro or momentum. And these things, momentum, these things are even more aggressive, if you can believe that. And what are they doing? They are buying and selling, and they're rolling dice and trying to make eye-popping returns. And have you figured out what happens when you try this? You may win big. And you may lose big. So the analogy that I use, and I don't know, if it works for you, great. If it doesn't work for you, then just forget about it. It's, I like to think of a buffet. I love food. Went to this great Spanish restaurant on Sunday night. Oh, is it expensive? But boy, was the food good. It's called Costa Brava in PB. Costa Brava? Oh boy, was it expensive. Well, every one of those tapas were $6, $8, and they were like, little bitty things like that. Yes, plunk down a lot of money. But don't do that too often. Spice. The jalapenos. The habaneros. The cayenne pepper. When you're at a buffet, do you fill up your plate with chili, red hot chili peppers? My son does. No, you don't. No, most people do. No.
You pour
the Valentine sauce on top of it. So, but if you want to put a little bit of your 401k or a little bit of your Roth IRA into an aggressive growth fund, okay? Not a whole lot. Because here's the problem. You will hear people say, oh, look at that return, 14% over 20 years, that's what I want. But what they don't look at is the standard deviation. They don't look that it went up 60%, down 30%, up 40%, down 40%. It was bouncing around. And what happens when that happens? You'll hear people say, I'm in it for the long term, until their $10,000 becomes $6,000. What do? They pull it out, right? They run for the hills and say, I'll never do that again, until it goes up another 60%, and they jump in and they pull out. So put a little bit there. On the same category, but just less risky, are the growth funds. The growth funds are mutual funds whose primary goals, capital gains, long-term growth, and they will have in their perspectives, we will strive to be 80% invested in growth stocks, or something along those lines. Some fund companies now have a category or two more speculative than aggressive growth. Ultra, Momentum, Pro. Remember we said that a mutual fund has to have at least 5% of its funds in, no more than 5% in any one in security? So this company, Janus, created a mutual fund called 20. Because 20 is the fewest number of stocks you own. And the idea being, we're going to try to pick 20 really good stocks. So not so much diversification, lots of concentration. If it works well, what's going to happen? If it doesn't work so well, right, the parachutes had better be very large. Are you with me?
Yep.
What a great class. What, this class?
Yeah.
Oh, it crashed and burned with everybody. They're mostly in tech stocks. I don't know, check them out. I haven't looked at them in 10 years. But they were the darling of the technology world at the end of the 90s. With some of you were children. Okay. Now, the next group. Here's where it starts to get a little weird. Capital appreciation funds. And what I'm going to do, and it ain't easy, try it sometimes, is try to show that these capital appreciation funds are lumped in with the aggressive growth and growth funds. Pretty good?
Except for the end.
I know, I went back. It's a Z. It looks like a Z. Okay. These are mutual funds that seek long-term growth of capital. Well, wait a minute. How does that differ from an aggressive growth or a growth fund? It's subtle. Most growth funds have a provision that states that they will invest primarily in growth stocks, usually staying between 100% and 80% invested in the stock market. Whereas capital appreciation funds often invest in anything they like and anywhere they like. So we like to think of these as flexible, or they paint with, how do you like this one? They paint with a broad brush. You like that? I don't know. In other words, a growth fund will invest in Apple and Google and companies that are growing. Whereas the capital appreciation fund will say, well, wait a minute, there's a food company that's hit on hard times. And people don't think it's going to turn around. But I do. I'm the manager of this capital appreciation fund. So I'm trying to grow the money. However I do it is okay because it's in the perspective. I can do that. And so I have a more flexible mandate. I have a more flexible command. Don't use that word balance. It's not balanced because a balance means a certain thing. We'll see probably on Thursday. But what they are doing is they're saying wherever I can find capital appreciation, wherever I can find something that's going to allow me to grow the fund whether it be a growth stock or a defensive stock or a blue chip stock or a cyclical or what the hell are you talking about, Piano? In chapter 5, we will discuss the various categories of stocks. And so that's one of the problems of doing mutual funds before you do stocks, because we're talking about companies, different types of companies that we haven't even discussed yet. But typically, a growth fund or aggressive growth fund will invest in growth stocks. A capital appreciation fund may invest in growth stocks. It may invest in what are called defensive stocks, which are not growing. Are utilities growing that fast, folks? SDG&E, is it growing? Every time they build a new development out in somewhere out in, you know, Santee or something like that, they got new customers. I'm going over your head, aren't I? What? Well, just hang on a minute. We're getting ahead of ourselves. But the idea is we paint with a broad brush. Is that good enough?
Yeah.
Good enough. Okay, let's continue. All right. If you ever heard of Peter Lynch, he ran it. We'll discuss him later on. He ran a mutual fund called Fidelity Magellan between 1977 and 1989 and racked up 29% a year. Dang. As everyone should say, dang.
Dang,
wait till I say it. He racked up 29% a year. Dang, yeah. And one of the books, in fact, the first book on the bibliography is called One Up on Wall Street. He wrote it. You should read it eventually. Not right now. The next category are the growth and income funds. And this is my personal favorite. Growth and income. Growth is capital gains, right? We're looking for companies to go up in value. But what's the income from stocks?
Money, dividends.
Everyone should say dividends. What's the income from stocks?
Dividends.
So yes, we want capital gains, but we also want dividends. And this one is sometimes referred to as blend. Oh, I want to use green for that. It's also sometimes referred to as blend, depending on who you talk to. And then it's sometimes referred to as value, although you got to be careful. Value has various meanings when we discuss investments. This, if we're continuing our food analogy, would be the main dish, the pasta, the meat and potatoes. Are you with me? Because when we're investing in stocks, we do want growth, yes, as the economy grows worldwide. We want to take advantage of that growth, but we love dividends. Why do we love dividends? Because that is cash in your pocket. That is money in your pocket that they can't take away from you. They can, stock price can fall, but once they pay you that dividend, they can't take it away. Are you with me? Understand? Okay, great. So if I were to ask you what you would recommend to an individual who's asking for your advice, what would you tell them should be their main dish for their stocks?
Momentum growth.
And now the last category.
Aggressive growth, Gary.
The last category is equity income. Now, why do they call it equity income? They call it equity income. They don't want you to know what the hell it means. What are equities?
Stocks, yeah.
What are equities?
Say it.
What are equities? Thank you. And what are income from stocks? So wouldn't it be nice if they called them stock dividend mutual funds? No, they call them equity income mutual funds, so you won't understand it. And now, if we're continuing our food metaphor, what is this?
Bread.
Bread. Oatmeal. Is it dinosaur oatmeal? Is oatmeal exciting?
Yeah, dinosaur
oatmeal. Is oatmeal exciting, folks? No. Is it good for you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Look what it does for horses. Right? Horses eat oats. And they're pretty good looking, aren't they? So... you don't think... I think horses are beautiful. I just can't imagine that animal... No, I don't want to go to the race, but I just like looking at I want to own one, because the vet bills are outrageous. I had some friends who owned a horse. They finally sold it. They lived out in Hamul. They loved the horse, but They're beautiful animals. And you think that they're not meat eaters, folks. They're not meat eaters. They eat oats. So these are mutual funds that emphasize current income and capital appreciation, capital preservation, by investing primarily in high-yielding, income-producing common stocks. In other words, you're not going to find Google or Apple in an equity income mutual fund. You're going to find CSX or Union Pacific Railroads. You're going to find Kellogg's or General Mills, right? Kraft, utilities, REITs, real estate investment trusts. They will also invest in bonds, income-producing investments, to generate income when the investment advisor believes that stock prices have risen to levels that threaten preservation of capital. So you understand? Over here, do we worry about preservation of capital?
No.
We know it's going to go down. But here we're saying, you know what, we want to invest in stocks, but we're worried. So in 2008, when the organic matter hit the Ventolin device, these guys went down 60, 70%. 50%. These guys went down 40, 30. Doesn't sound like a big difference, but over time, it is. But when everybody's rocking and rolling and partying, what are these guys doing? Sitting eating their oatmeal. Do you understand the difference? Yeah. Good, good. What a great group. Okay. Many equity income funds did well during the 2000 to 2000 bear market. This is after lagging the market. This is after lagging the market badly in the late 1990s. In the late 1990s, nobody wanted these companies. Yeah, they're old economy. You want new economy companies. Nobody's going to be buying their groceries at the grocery stores anymore. Who would want to invest in a REIT? I always remember, I'll never forget this woman saying, I was showing this REIT. I loved this REIT. I bought it myself. Nobody's going to be going to grocery stores anymore. You get all your food off the internet.
What?
Remember Web Grocer? Home Grocer? Web Van? You remember those? There's a reason why they're gone. Okay, but guess what happened in 2008? They got clobbered too. But as I said, they went down 30%, not 50 or 40 or 60. Now, got that? You have that? All right, on top of that, we're going to add two other categories. The first category is the size of the company. Is it large cap, mid cap? And we're not talking about baseball cap. Cap stands is a short for capitalization. But we'll worry about that later when we get to chapter 5. So the large cap are the papa bears, mama bears, and the baby bears. Okay? Now, which one do you think is the riskiest? No, this is baby bears. Because when the economy does poorly, the companies that are the largest, they have their roots deep in the economy. So they're like a big tree, right? With its roots down really far. So when the winds blow, they don't get uprooted. What happens to the baby bears? They get blown away, and the mid are somewhere in between. And then what we're going to do is we're going to overlay the domesticity. Huh? Where is it based? Is it domestic? Is it global? Or is it international? Do you remember the subtle distinction? Domestic means inside the United States. International means outside the United States. And global is both. So which one do you think is riskiest? 50 years ago, everybody would have said foreign or international. Right. That was the most risky, and domestic was the least risky, and global was somewhere in between. Is that true anymore?
No.
No, it's not. Because the world is global, and there's some companies that are based in the United States. You ever hear of Philip Morris International? Not Philip Morris. Philip Morris International is based in the United States and sells every single one of its products outside the United States. So, try to figure that out. It's a United States company, but it does no business in the United States. Except for growing tobacco. So now, what we're going to do is we're going to create one from column A and one from column B and one from column C. So on your, what is it? Let me see here. It says, it's a global Large cap. Growth fund?
Yeah.
Growth fund. You understand?
Yes.
And if one company creates a global large cap growth fund, then all the other companies have to do it. You with me? And if one company creates a, what is the next one? A large cap? Domestic, small cap, aggressive. It's a domestic, small cap, aggressive growth fund. And if one company creates a domestic, small cap, aggressive growth fund, all the other companies have to do it. Now do you understand why there could be 10,000 different mutual funds? You statistics folks, these are called permutations. Work out how many permutations there are of five things taken three at a time, and it exponentiates, it explodes. Are you with me? You see what you're up against? Because these aren't the only categories out there. Dang. Are you tired? No? No? Do you want to go to lunch? All right. Should we? No. All right. Oh, yeah. Let's finish up this. Let's finish up this slide, and then we'll start from here on Thursday. And you're going to study this, right? Nod your heads yes. Come on. Nod your head. It makes me feel good. You can buy mutual funds that are regional, that just invest in Japan or Canada or the Far East or Latin America. What do you think of that? I'm not a big fan. If you know something about Latin America because you happen to work or live there, you have relatives down in Mexico, and you see Mexico doing pretty well, and Chile and Peru are kicking butt, and Brazil is doing phenomenally, go ahead, put 10-20% of your 401k in there. You understand? But I would not want this to be my meat and potatoes. Because you're concentrating, not diversifying. Same thing is true for emerging markets. Emerging markets have been on a tear for 20 years. But there's a reason why sometimes they're called submerging markets. High risk, high return, yeah. India, Mexico, Brazil, Russia, they're doing great, but they're extremely volatile. Philippines, China, Turkey. People go, Turkey? You mean Turkey? You see those Ford Transit vans? The ones that look really European? They're smaller. They look, you've seen them, Transit vans. They're not that big. They're small, and they have but you can go, you can walk inside them. I'll show you a picture after class. They're made in Turkey by Ford. And then, as Victor had described, there are funds that we'll take a look at on Thursday called sector funds. Sector funds invest in just one sector of the economy, wireless communications, or energy exploration, or chemical production, or, you understand? Do you think this is a good idea? I don't. I tell people stay away from these things. Now, say you work in energy exploration. You've been up and back and forth between South Dakota and Montana, and you see the whole industry exploding. Sure, take a little bit of your money, put it there, but I don't think it's a good idea. No, I'm talking about just the exploration. Just going there and building the drills. You know, putting the drills in the ground, getting it out, refining it, and selling it. Those are other sectors, as we'll see. We'll see some examples.
Where the company also makes a lot of money.
Oh, they've been doing great. You ever hear of Schlumberger? What a great name, Schlumberger. And then the last one is, if anybody tries to sell you a market timing fund, just go. I can't believe that they would have you. It's dumb. All right, so folks. I want you to study hard, study, study, study. On Thursday, we will complete this. And if you want to see a transit van, truck, just stick around and I'll show you one. Okay, thank you. All right, if you're late, come on up. I need to get you. If you're late, don't go.